All right, everybody, welcome to our very first episode of Steel Nation Radio presented by Steeler Takeaways. I'm Mike Pelaya of SteelNationAssociation.com, where we cover the Steelers all day, every day, raising money for Children's Hospital of Pittsburgh. With me is my co-host and author of the new Steeler book, Steeler Takeaway, Ron Lippick. How's it going today, Ron?
Doing well. Glad to be on.
So we
are going to start with Ed Bradley, who is a Steelers linebacker who started with the Steelers as a fourth-round pick in 1972 and has some great stories about how he joined the team and actually an unknown story about how he actually came through the organization, actually was almost to a point a starter in Super Bowl IX, which not a lot of people realize, so he'll have a good story about that. But in the meantime, we wanted to ask Ed a couple questions before we jump in. And Ed, first just let us know how you're doing, what you're doing with yourself now. Are you still in North Carolina?
Yes, Ron. Ron, Mike, here in Winston-Salem, North Carolina. I went to school at Wake Forest in Winston-Salem and always maintained my off-season home here. And once retiring from football, went to work in the scrap metal recycling business and was in that for 32 years and happily retired almost 3 years ago.
And how's the health and how's the golf game?
Well, the health, I've got my aches and pains. I went and saw my therapeutic masseuse yesterday, and I've taken yoga. I've got myself an inversion table in my garage to sort of get the back in place. Aches and pains, but it was all well worth it. Price you sort of got to pay if you're going to play the game.
Well, speaking of health, that's actually going to be our topic of today, kind of how teams overcome injuries and deal with them throughout the season. So I'm going to go right into it with you, Ed. When players go down and coaches kind of preach the next man up philosophy, players say that they buy into that and they expect everybody around them to step up. But is that something they just say, or do players in that locker room truly buy into that philosophy and believe that anyone can step up and handle the load?
Yeah, absolutely believe it. You got to remember that you started in training camp with, 80, 90 players, and through the process of the preseason and training camp, you weed out those players who the staff feels can't, really contribute to the team, so that when the season comes, you're set. These are your guys, and you've got to trust and believe in all of them, and they have to do the same for, within themselves. Not what do they have, a 53-man roster? When I started the league, we only had a 40-man roster. So you learn to play hurt, you learn to trust in your teammates, and yes, you believe in the next man up principle.
So I had a question for you, especially this season with Steelers being as banged up as they are. And there's a lot of talk in camp about how physical that camp was this year. It's one of the more physical camps they've had in a long time, they said. From your perspective, do those physical camps help or hurt in terms of that health throughout the season? There's a couple different mindsets on those physical camps and how they prepare or maybe hinder a player's ability to stay healthy once the season starts. Any thoughts on that?
Yeah, it's a double-edged sword. We had 6 weeks of training camp, and they were extremely physical. Contact began on day one and went through the entire camp. They started to ramp it down a little bit as the camp went along, but there's nothing you can do. All the running and lifting and stretching and conditioning you want, but you cannot get yourself to be football ready unless you have contact. There's just a difference. You could be in the greatest shape in the world, and then you go out and you have a 30-minute scrimmage, you can't get out of bed the next morning because of that. Your body actually becomes a condition to the contact. And there's no way to avoid that. It's a violent game, and the people you're lining up against on Sunday are going through the same thing. They're going to be coming at you. You got to be coming at them, and it is necessary. I don't know, what the whining was about the camp being too physical. I can only relate from my own experiences that that's just the way it was done.
Now you mentioned, you know, that you're going to go through your aches and pains and bruises and all that throughout camp and obviously the season. And I think that every football player certainly expects that. But what in today's day, there's a few players out there that are known as dirty players. And when they injure a player, I'm sure there was some in your time too. How do guys react to that? I mean, you expect that in the actual battle, but when it's somebody doing it intentionally, how do you guys react to something like that?
I mean, that's the lowest of low. No, you don't jeopardize, even though we're opponents, they got a different color uniform, helmet, and whatever, we're all part of the same fraternity. We're all working the same job. And you do not ever, ever intentionally try to take somebody's ability to be a player away from them by intentionally trying to hurt them. That's low beyond low.
Anyone to jump in and ask another question and sort of relate a story that you told me in our interview some time ago. And it was a fun story about how, you know, in Super Bowl IX when Jack Lambert went down in the first quarter, and not a lot of people, I think, realize this. You played for the majority of the football game, and clearly you did pretty well considering Minnesota didn't do much on offense all game. But you're sitting on the bench, you know, I know you're playing on his teams, but on special teams, but all of a sudden, you know, Jack Lambert goes down and you're starting in the Super Bowl. How do you make that leap from the bench to the field starting? How do you keep yourself calm enough and settle down enough in that kind of situation so that you're not just all over the place come the field?
Oh, yeah. Well, first of all, you know, the preparation leading up to the Super Bowl or any game, even though I was not a starter, I was always involved in the game plan and the defensive strategies and knew all the calls. And so, yes. It was actually at the end of the first half that Jack went out that I was given the call. And, yeah, my heart went up my throat. But I was ready. I was ready. And I got out there, and it was like riding a bicycle. I recognized the formations. I got the calls. I made the adjustments. And I made plays. And just to illustrate that, a couple years ago up at Coach Knoll's funeral, ran into Joe Green. Joe was the first person I saw when I got out there. And he came up to me later that evening and said, "You know what? I didn't even know until the fourth quarter that you were in the game." He thought Lambert was still playing.
Wow. There you go.
That's incredible. Is there any specific moment within that game, any play that stands out to you that you always think about immediately?
Oh, not really. I had a very, very solid half. I remember, stuffing Chuck Foreman in the backfield. I read the blocking scheme up front, and I shot the gap, and I hit him as soon as Tarkenton handed the ball off to him. And I had a couple of plays like that, and I don't know if my feet ever touched the ground in the second half. I mean, I was in the zone. I was definitely in the zone, and fortunately performed flawlessly. And you know, it was a close game at the end of the first half, and you know, with me going in there, I sure as heck didn't want to screw it up for the team, but most of all for Mr. Rooney. I wanted to win this one for the Chief like we all did, and I wasn't going to be I was not going to be a negative part of that. I wanted to be a positive.
So you tell a fun story about how your grandmother was mad at Kirk Gowdy because he was saying Jack Lambert playing. has that settled down?
That is a true story. Jack, of course, was number 58, and I was 38. And when the change came there to begin the second half and I was playing, my grandmother back home in Connecticut was watching. And yeah, Kirk Gowdy and I think Al D. Regattas were doing the game. And Gowdy kept calling out my number. Calling out Jack Lambert's name and number when I was making the plays. And boy, that ticked my grandmother off. I don't think she ever forgave him for that.
So, in the preparation for the week before the game, I was a little squad, and I guess it was a taxi squad, they called it. Sort of similar
concepts. Right.
How did that work? So how did you prepare the, you know, I think there's a big misperception amongst fans about the role of guys on the tactical squad, not the practice squad, what they do and don't do, and how important their roles were. Can you talk a little bit about that, sort of what the role of that tactical squad was and how it kept the team, you know, really prepared?
Right. As I mentioned, you know, back then we had a 40-man roster and an 8-man taxi squad, and they practiced with us day in and day out. They did not suit up for games unless one of them was called up. If somebody on that 40-man roster had an injury and had to go down, then they would bring somebody up from the taxi squad. And if you went down, you had to stay down a minimum of 2 weeks. And so that was almost like going to a gulag. You didn't want to go down. You weren't sure if you'd ever be called up. That only happened to me once in my 4 years in Pittsburgh. I went down, had a bad leg injury, and I got put down. But fortunately, after my 2 weeks on taxi squad, they brought me right back up to the active roster, so I was very fortunate. But that's the way it worked. And those guys, yes, an important, integral part of the team, and they had to be at the ready, they had to be next man up if they were called.